Some dodgy, we all know someone dodgy, don't we?
Yeah. And, someone who's tried to wank a dog off.
Hello and welcome back to episode 17 of Meat for the Beast. There's no McVeigh this episode, sadly. Basically, we met up yesterday because I was over near his for some work stuff, and I went in with all the podcast stuff, and we agreed we were both fucked because I'd been up till 4 the night before on a job, and he'd been up to a similar time out on the lash, and he'd had a deadline on as well. And we started setting off and then decided it wasn't happening. And I even fell asleep on his sofa, as in out cold, and fucking woke up not knowing where the hell I was. So I think it's probably a good move we didn't record, because it probably would have been shit. I realised we let Halloween sail by once again without doing any sort of proper Halloween episode, so we owe you a belated Halloween episode, which will be coming soon, as soon as me and him can get together again, or maybe we'll end up Skyping it. So anyway, McVeigh's given me the all clear to make this episode a special. Now, I've been harping on about a band I've been in for quite a few years called the Friends of Batman, and there was a premiere recently. It was a friend of ours, Rene Dorset, who was in, we know him from playing gigs over the years in Sheffield. He was in a band called Commercial Dual Purpose. You know, did a couple of other projects, did a bunch of videos for bands and that sort of stuff. Rennie also had a record label called the Laundrette Recording Place or something. Laundrette Records, I think it was. And they did a lot of good stuff for the Sheffield music scene. Sadly, he doesn't do it anymore because he's very fucking busy. But anyway, so when Rennie heard that the Friends of Batman, the FOB, is winding down, he spoke with James, aka Terry. We call him Terry because in the band he's called Terry's All Gold. He's kind of weird gimp bloke. And they hatched this plan to make a kind of send-off, kind of rockumentary for the band. And it was originally going to be a few minutes long, and it ended up becoming a proper beast. It's like about an hour long. They had a proper premiere. We were going to just tag it on the start of our final gig, but because it kind of came into its own, we decided it was worth its own event. And I made a poster for it, and we had, like, you know, I've mentioned it in the past, it hired out the back, you know, this really impressive back room in a nice pub in Sheff called the Grey Stones. Shout out to the Grey Stones. If you're ever in the area, check it out. Some beautiful views of the city and amazing beers, and it's just a cool place. And they let us have the venue for free, which was really nice. And so we set it up, and we turned it into our own private kind of Larry cinema kind of thing, Larry boozy cinema. And we did this premiere for their film. They called it The Montage of Feck Off, obviously play on words of the recent Nirvana documentary. And it turned out really well. Everybody there seemed to really love it, and it's had a good reaction. And it was a nice thing to do to kind of end the band. And anyway, so I went along with McVeigh, and we took the mic and the laptop, and we spoke to those guys. We also spoke to our friend Daniel, who was there. And I totally dropped the ball, because the microphone defaulted to the internal microphone on the laptop, which it's never done before. I had no reason to think it was going to do that. I'd even tested it, and it was fine. And then the next time I used it, it just did this weird shit. I don't know whether, for whatever reason, it was really annoying, because we lost about 40 minutes chatting with James and Renee that I was quite pleased with. And so to make up for that, I went to see Renee around his, and James joined us, and we had a good chat about it. And I think, you know, to someone, you know, I'm guessing some people hearing this have never heard the band, probably don't give a shit, but if, just in case you do, just to give us some background, we started around about 2002. Me and James, we'd played in bands together before, but this was the first time we'd got to a gig situation. We were in a band called the Ape Drape Escape, who were kind of started as quite a shouty, punky outfit, more so your kind of 70s punk, but it was more like your Daft sort of Pistols, Black Flag, X-ray Specs, that kind of thing. We used to do an X-ray Specs cover. Anyway, so that was kind of our proper band. And then Rene, who made the film, his band nicely kind of supported us that night. And then we struggled to get a third support act. And I'd at the time been writing some daft songs just on my own on a shitty old guitar that was falling apart. So the band said, why don't you come and just open up for us, play your kind of daft songs, and that'll kind of fill the night up a bit, and Rene can come in with Commercial Dual Purpose and kick some ass in the second slot, and then we can sort of headline as this new band. And so it was kind of like, it was cool night. It was my first gig, and I was kind of dead scared because I had to sort of step up on pretty much on my own at first, but James said he would join me on stage because I was pretty nervous about it. And I was also shit at tuning my guitar. So I found this kind of gimp mask, and James borrowed this leather waistcoat off his dad, Bob. And James kind of just stood at the back, looking kind of intimidating and cool. And that kind of really seemed to capture people's imaginations, and it was like, why the fuck's that guy at the back? But it was mainly because I was nervous and I just couldn't tune my guitar at the time. I was completely shit. Like, I still don't know what the strings are called, but that was more of a deliberate move on my part because I wanted to keep it quite punk rock. So, to cut a long story short, we did that. First, it was mainly just me playing, and gradually James said, I feel like a fucking idiot stood at the back. I want to be more involved. So James got a stylophone and various other instruments. Friend Kendall joined on the cello. He's an excellent celloist. He moved over to the States and kind of had some success over there. The cool guy, you know. Ended up playing on the Dexter soundtrack, and it's pretty impressive. And then other friend, after Kendall left, other friends joined, like a friend Phil on the theremin, who's also a shit hot lead guitarist. Steve first was on the kazoo and then graduated. He became quite a rock solid kind of folk bass player. So he would sort of lay down some pretty sweet bass lines. And then Sam, a pal of Phil's, joined us on drums. Quite a cool range of styles. Sam can play the jazzy stuff, but he can also like thrash out a fucking dirty fucking basic rock beat. So he was a good guy to have on board. He's also pretty fucking mental bastard. So I'm harping on a bit now. I just wanted to give a bit of background about the band and about the film. It's kind of a, we called it a rockumentary, but it's almost like cross between a documentary and an episode of The Fast Show or something, because it's full of just daft sketches about how we met, kind of made fantasy version of how we met, and various other stupidity. And I really like it. I think it really works. Just a quick shout out to the 1980s movie Graveyard. They came on my radar through their Facebook page, where they put up old 80s sort of VHS covers and that kind of thing every day. A lot of stuff I had not seen before. A few I'd totally forgotten about, like Best of the Best. So shout out to those guys. I've been listening to their podcast and really enjoying it. I've also had a bit of a bonding session with them on Facebook about the much kind of forgotten Dolph Lundgren Punisher film, which I own on various formats. I think it's great, but it's kind of seen, I think, by many as a bit of a dud because he doesn't wear the Punisher t-shirt, and for some reason he's driving his bike around a fucking sewer, which I think nice touches, nice nods to the era. I suppose that came from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something, the sewer. But so anyway, yeah, shout out to those guys. They're based somewhere on the west coast of the States. Really like what they do, and they put one out every week. They're pretty prolific, so if you're thirsty for some podding, check them out, go their way. Right, so without further ado, we're going to go over to James / Terry and Renee to discuss the montage of Feck Off, the epitaph for our old punk rock band, the Friends of Batman.
Mexican man, it's just a bad accent. And
what are you talking about? Listen, motherfucker. I don't know how he came out with it, and I just was disgusted. And basically, it just made the audience hate us.
You know the band's over, though, mate.
No. I know you've said that you fucking hate them for ages, and I, to be honest with you, I've only tolerated them.
Well, listen, Terry. Listen, I've got a family now. I've got a life over here.
Thank you very much for your time. It's been useless, really. There's nothing we can use there. I think we're going to have to go back to
the drawing board. It's a pity you feel that way, Terry. I honestly thought this was the best intentions. I was hoping you were as well, but it doesn't sound like it. But I will say this. I will say this, that I don't regret anything we went through together as a band.
I'm still Terry from the blog. I used to have a little, but now I've got a lot. I'm still Terry from
the blog. The worst experience when I had to meet up with them for rehearsal or perform.
Sister Act 2.
Oh, what fucking difference?
Two words, mate.
Yeah.
Lauren Hill.
And I've got two words for you. It's fucking shit.
Okay, so after my field trip fuck up, where the mic defaulted to the internal mic, I'm back with Renee Dorset and James Bonsall, a.k.a. Terry.
Never heard of him.
We're here to discuss...
You're quite offended by that, aren't you, James?
We're here to discuss the montage of Feck Off, which is a documentary about the band we're in, the Friends of Batman. And so I'm going to start with a question, firstly for Rene. What inspired you to make the film? What was your... what was the light bulb?
There wasn't one really. It was just a chance occurrence. I mean, I've been wanting to make something for ages, especially around the band. And do you just come to me, James?
We'd talked about it years ago, haven't we? Really, and then being the slack bastards that we are, never really did anything. And then with the occurrence of the demise of the Friends of Batman. Decided to ask Ren to help out on what was going to be a small 5-minute documentary filming each other on phones. It spiralled into a maelstrom of shit.
An hour's worth of shit.
Yeah, it was going to be before the final gig, wasn't it? And then it turned into a proper full on its own event kind of thing.
Funny thing is, it did actually come in on time, but just over time.
Yeah.
But no, there was no plan. It just happened. It was odd. There was no right, let's do this, that. We just pulled up with cameras and filmed it, and what happened, which I think made it a better film. I think if we would have sat and planned it and scripted it, it wouldn't have been as good as what it was.
Yeah.
A lot of it looks as though it was planned, but it wasn't planned.
And a lot of it looks as though it was unplanned.
We just turn up, like, you know, you mentioned the... it's only because I listened to it today, but you mentioned the whole scene with Terry and Brother Teresa you know, going from Sister Act 2 to Scum. But that wasn't... I just turned up at Sam's house and we said, oh, what should we do? Get dressed up. Oh, I want to go on my motorbike. Can we film that? And then we came back to his garage and there was a pool table there and it was like, hold on then, what can we do with this? And we just filmed it there and then and just made it up on the spot.
Cool.
And it just happened. I mean,
it kind of turned from what was supposed to be a retrospective look back on the career of the band into not even really giving a shit that the band was finishing.
I had to come back to film the scene after when they made, you know, there was the makeup scene of it afterwards, because yeah. when I filmed it and edited it and looked back, I was like, fucking hell, this is right arse. Just to turn up, you know, be all matey and that, and then end up getting a fucking snooker ball in the face. I had to just go, well, we had to refilm a little bit because I, like a dickhead, didn't film it. But yeah, I felt I had to make it all better because it was just a little bit nasty. It turned my stomach a little bit just watching it.
Terry's a bad man.
I was going to say that I was chatting with James stroke Terry earlier, and the way, because that scene sort of shows.
I've never stroked Terry.
Have you never done it with a mask on?
That scene is supposed to depict a reenact how Terry met Sam, who plays the drums. It's like Brother Teresa, his name in the band. But the way we actually met him is probably even more fucked up than in the film, because he came to one of our gigs because he knew Phil plays the theremin and guitar, and he got shit-faced and then came up to me after the gig. I'd never really met him before and said, do you want to shag my wife? And he was taking the piss, but having never met him, it was a bit strange. And then... I think the following day, Phil said he wanted to join the band because he had such a great time.
But to link in with that, not shagging anybody else's wife, but I turned up at one of your gigs because I've known you guys for years, so I'd go to periodically go to gigs. Turn up and I'm thinking, I know that bloke, I know that person, and there was like loads of people that I used to know from school, but not like mates, but teachers, and it just happens to be. This knobhead dressed up as a nun gets off stage, takes his glasses and his hat off, and it's my old school teacher, which is just not right. But yeah, it's all weirdly connected.
So, all right, another question. Pull this to Terry first. So, what were your goals in making the film? What were you?
As much screen time for me as possible.
Good stuff.
I just wanted to document what life in the Friends of Batman was like, which really, although it seems insane, is kind of what came across in the film, is just a load of 40-something men that should know better.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that came across quite well. As it was, there was a lot more Terry in it than anything else. Which is Ren's fault, because he's the editor. So
I didn't stop yet.
No, but I just kept having little ideas for things, and just sort of rolled with it, really. And then, like I said, it just snowballed and became this entity.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking A.
This polished turd.
Oh, it's not at all. How about highlights of the film for Ren?
Just how it happened is, you know, it still just amazes me how it just came about. You know, there's certain bits that were filmed. There's a whole sort of when we're trying to meet Theremin, and there's a whole big chase scene, which was all I was trying to do was get an interview from Phil. And he just kept on sending me clips of him running away. And it's just like, right, what are we going to do with this? Is this? Does he not want to be interviewed? But then he ended up did want to be interviewed. But then on the spot, we just made it up, you know, that he ended up, it was a dream sequence, and we put that all together, and it kind of worked like we planned it, but we didn't.
Yeah, it worked a treat.
But yeah, it's, you know.
A lot of it was, like I'd say to Ren, well, can you pixelate my balls out in this bit? And it's just like, well, we'll throw that in there and see what happens. And then Ren would come back, say, what do you think of this? And I'd be like, how the fuck have you done that? or like filming things on three different cameras. And I'm like, how's he ever going to cut something together from that? And then coming back and it'd be like, fucking hell, that looks quite decent.
Yeah, definitely.
It's just like trying different things. It was like, you know, there's the whole Terry singing in the car, which, you know, did go on for a hell of a long time, but you could have said, should we cut it down? And I was just like, no, because I kind of think it... I think Family Guy do it a bit. When something goes on a little bit too far, you think that should have finished, but then it carries on a little bit more and it makes it more funny. So the fact that you're singing a whole song, you know, it kind of works.
It still makes me cringe a bit. I feel I should offer my apologies to Rainbow as well, and is it Graham Bonnet, who I discovered afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Actually sang it, not DL. R.I.P.
But, all right, what about the premiere? So loads of people showed up. I thought it was a pretty cool day. Did you guys have a good time?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. There was a little bit of a stress at the start when we couldn't get the sound to work and we couldn't find DI boxes and that kind of business.
Yeah.
But
I took on my producer's role and let Ren deal with it all.
I'm there like, what did I do? Ringing this guy up and he's like, oh, DI boxes are downstairs, got this DI box and plugging it in, and then finding this like 32 channel desk right at the back of the room,
like
thinking,
what
the hell am I supposed to do with this? And they're switching buttons on, and then all of a sudden sound came out, it was fine.
Which is quite relevant to the band, because it seems like Phil Steremin worked about fucking once in our career. Felt like it'd all work out all right. And the film quality was quite good, considering wasn't there a rumour that you'd deleted the film the day before or something?
Yes.
Always back up.
Well, the thing is, I'm using, an 8-year-old Mac, which is, you know, held together with masking tape, so it's not the best. The trackpad doesn't work, so I've got to plug a mouse in. It's only got two USB cables, so to back anything up just isn't happening. So I had to get... I borrowed a... an external hard drive off Steve, which I was keeping everything on, and then one day it just didn't work. So I did something that many people would run away from, but I actually opened up a hard drive, not in a clean room, and fiddled about with it with my fingers, put it back together and rescued everything. So it worked, but that was a horrible 48 hours. Weren't you coming back from Dismoland?
Yeah.
And I forgot that. I didn't want to tell you because I knew you'd freak out, but I told Ez, who happened to be in the car with you. So Ez has come back to say it was quite a tense car journey to think that
fucking dickhead. Well, I gave you about a million memory sticks. You could have backed it all.
But no, we saved it. And the quality was all right.
Yeah,
it looked good.
It looked good to me.
I was bricking it, to be honest with you, before the premiere. So having watched it between his friends and like showing it to our Rich, who's always been a fan, to actually show it to real human beings... it was worse than doing a gig, I think, for me. And when we were sat outside the Greystones and thought, well, there's not many people here. Then we went inside. It's like
piling at the last minute.
Yeah, it's like the Friends of Batman magic. It was like the last gig. Just nowhere. People just appeared. And it's like, what the fuck? You're like hidden under tables or something.
It's weird, that, isn't it? We always seem to set up and walk out of an empty room. And then when we come back, it's fucking rammed. What happened there?
Well, it was really good in the showing, because by the time everyone had got in, there was nowhere for me to sit. So I ended up scooting down the side, sitting next to our Rich, and just sort of being in the middle of it, being able to hear people's reactions to things was really good.
Yeah.
Laughing in the right places.
That was the worrying bit. When it started, I was proper shitting it, but... we kind of did fake adverts at the start of it, so as soon as they started and we got laughs at that point, I totally relaxed then, because I just thought people wouldn't get it. I did a test run with some bloke at work, Mark. I don't think he'll listen to it, I was just like, yeah, have a watch of this, and he said, oh yeah. The next day he came to work and he didn't say anything. I thought, he's not fucking watched it. And then towards the end of the day he slipped me back this USB disc, and he's just like, I watched it. And I was just like, right, and he's just like, it's the most fucked up thing I've ever seen. And I was like, really? And it was just like, honestly, my sister came upstairs, because he doesn't live in Sheffield, he lives with his sister. She came upstairs to make sure everything was all right, because he was laughing so much. She was like, what are you watching? Why are you laughing so much? But I don't think he let her watch it, because it's a bit it's not, I don't think it's a bit fucked up, but but people do.
Perhaps that's just us, the deviants.
So, Wolf Terry, critical reception. Tell us about the critical reception.
The critical reception is with asked loads of people to reveal it, and no one did.
Oh, no,
your
one
mate.
Was more of a preview, I guess.
Yeah, your mate Daniel from UK Horror Scene did a sterling job with his fake quotes, which made me laugh loads. But no, everyone,
I had to make him change one.
Really?
Yeah, there was one I was like, I don't think we should put that on there. Don't get on the front of the star.
People in general seem to really like it, which is, at the end of the day, all we're trying to do is make people laugh and dick about, and it seemed to do the job, so it's all good.
There's a good one from Expose magazine.
Yeah.
Some bloke called Saul, who nobody knows who the fuck he is, but thanks to Saul.
Better call him.
I'm sure he's never heard that. I wondered if he was there. I
emailed them to see if they would watch it, but obviously I didn't hear, you know, I was checking, so it was like when it came out, sort of checked the August one, you know, the September one, the October one, and it wasn't there, and I was just like, it's not happening. And then Swin just posted a picture of it on Facebook, and it's like, there's a review. Ooh. I must have read it about 20 times, just kept on reading it, and then, I was just like, no, I like it. It sums it up completely. It was brilliant.
Didn't put a link to it, though, did it? No. The YouTubes.
Oh, it had an extra something like 8 hits, though, since then, so...
I'll do all right, though, I reckon, through Expose. I think they've got about 20-odd thousand, whatever you call it, distribution, so... Certainly won't do any harm.
It's had, what, nearly 260 views in...
A few piss wankers will watch it late at night, I reckon.
Never be the same again.
Crack one out to Terry.
Terry's bald.
Yeah, I did worry it was a bit of a fucking sausage fest, but, there's a couple of ladies on there.
I suppose you had Missy and Nat Johnson.
And your wife. Don't forget your wives in it.
We're grateful for their contributions, really. After we'd sort of put the word out, saying if you want to contribute, and then slowly it's like, your fellow Beastmaster, like, I'll do you something.
Well, we got all the stuff in, and Hal, Grimsby Lantern. He sent something in. I had a word with him afterwards, because obviously I recognised him, and he didn't even know he was in it, because I had to replace him with a fucking talking bird, because he'd obviously I didn't think about it beforehand, but if it was done in it was done differently, even though the aspect ratio, I'm sure McVie will complain about that again, but it went all shitty, when it was portrait, I couldn't do anything with it just looked shit if you had a black bar at either side, or I had a look, and other ways you could do it was just like repeat it on the other side and make it all blurry, and it just looked a bit fucking ITN, so I was just like, nah. So I just decided to change people around. So there's a couple of people that are action men and Lego men, he didn't even know that he was in it. He was just like, oh, well, I thought I'd send something in, but I don't know why he didn't recognise his own voice, but hey.
We should offer some thanks to Mr. McVie for his hard work on the premiere day or in the run-up to the premiere in getting us a screen to project onto.
That was actually my next question. Any thoughts on ScreenGate? Screen issue.
It's a pussy. It's taken a few centimetres off that little belly of his. So stop moaning, otherwise Terry's going to come and lick your face again.
Old Fatty McVee's long gone. We've mourned the loss of Fatty McVee. He's been on some weird diet.
He should do an exercise video.
He's been on some diet that means he can still drink like a fish and lose weight. It's been what the fuck that's
Karen
like
Carpenter diet.
Heroin.
So, yes, any apologies or anything like that to James? Or
apologies
not to distance myself away from it, but I didn't fucking ask him to bring this. You're two. Don't bring me into this. I thought you knew there was a screen in there, having your stag do in there and everything.
Yeah, that's partly my fault. I was trying to wrap my brains as whether there was or wasn't back then. I mean, I've got the photos, I should have a proper look, really.
There's one on the photo, but we didn't know whether it was one that was brought or not. But no, yeah. Sterling job for bringing it. It's nice one.
Any other thoughts on the film? Anything you want to anyone to know? So you got to find a film. Just Google montage of Feck Off, Friends of Batman, or just go on YouTube and.
It's quite easy. It comes up straight away on YouTube if you just Google that. Brings
it
up.
Red Makes Films.
Yeah, all one word, and then you can see some other shit on there if you want.
Ren's got a few other vids, and you did that stuff for those werewolf guys. What was that?
Epileptic Hillbillies.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I've done a few things for them. There's a road movie on there when.
That's cool, wasn't it?
Yeah, friend of a friend who ended up being a tattoo artist that ended up just covering me tattoos, and then one day he was like, do you make films? I was just like, yeah. He was like, fancy just coming to France and Germany and in Spain. That, you know, it was the most fucked up thing I've ever done in my life. It was, there was German rent boys, there was Nazis, it was just fucking weird. I can go into it if you want, but it was just weird.
They weren't Nazis. They were just
it was a venue that we went to in Germany, and it was this really cool undercover, like, underground bunker, and we thought, cool, and we're all getting into it. And then the promoter guy just had to say, oh, just let you know that this is an anti-Nazi place. I'm like, yeah, we're fine, we're not bothered. The Nazis don't like it, so they might turn up. We've had trouble last week or so, and they just apparently came down and used to smash it up. So we're all there in this venue thinking, shit man, are we going to play a gig and loads of Nazis going to turn up and start causing trouble?
But so the story is, you're not a racist.
Not in public.
No.
So cool.
But
I mean, if you want to add anything about the film, go for it.
Watch it and enjoy it. Tell us what you think about it. Try and pressure these guys to make a sequel.
Tell your friends, and if those two friends tell another two friends, tell another two friends, this time next year we could have about 20 pence.
I don't think we can make any money of it, since all this stuff that's probably robbed and put into it, and the little bits we've nicked from other films, etc. You know, I don't think it'd.
Whoopi Goldberg's on in Terry Downer this week. Sister Act was much better.
Well, why don't we. You know, you're sat telling us, you know, asking us questions. What did you like about it?
Favourite bit's the when Terry meets Sam, the brother Teresa. Don't know, something about it. I particularly like just when Sam goes, "Oh, what's fucking different?" I don't know, just something about that scene really resonates.
I was quite worried about filming with Sam because he's such a bit of an fucking awful nutter. And then it all just sort of fell into place so easily.
Be naked, semi-naked in front of firemen in drum field.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
Oh, yeah, didn't the firemen show up when you were filming?
Yeah, Sam's like, firemen will not be about. It's 7:30 at night. So we just go by clothes and shoes bin there, and then all of a sudden fire truck pulls up, and there's me stood there as Terry in shorts and a leather waistcoat. The fireman sort of stood there, arms folded, waiting to wash fire truck down until we'd finished.
Waiting to get the roses out for Terry.
We should send them it.
I mean,
the whole clothes and shoes thing wasn't even planned. Didn't that just come afterwards? Once we'd filmed it, we just filmed the clothes and shoes bin, and then it all of a sudden became part of the film. You know,
we're now getting friend of a friend, Dean, Captain Flange, as he likes to be known. He started sending us pictures of him next to clothes and shoes bins around
good.
Sheffield.
Keeping the dream alive.
With his dog.
The picture that Jude took outside the clothes and shoes bin. That was a really cool picture.
Yeah.
That was a stroke of genius.
I just look so happy. And Terry's getting sucked off by Sam.
No, it was a good do. Yeah. It was a nice epitaph for the FOBs. We'll be back one day.
I had to get dragged to the just to sober up since it was early afternoon and I had a few too many to drink.
It was a hot day though, wasn't it? It hit me a bit that day.
Mm. I had a Coke and
I had to pick something in Nando's when I was looking at the menu that was just like moving to the left every time I looked at it.
Terry doesn't drink, but he likes to have the odd boogie with Mary Jane.
How dare you. How dare you.
So I won't mind. I was thinking maybe we could just sort of end it by sharing a couple of general FOB memories, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I was just to give a bit of insight on the band. Like, I don't chip in by the first one I could think of was the first gig where Cat Minx, the sock puppet, in the days where put any effort into it, constructed like a UFO out of tinfoil, and Cat Minx came and sang a song. It's one memory I'll never forget. And I remember the first.
Well, we were all there as well, weren't we? Because commercial. Joel Hoover were there as well, weren't they?
Yeah, Rentband was supporting us. Oh, we were supporting you or something.
No, it was Friends of Batman, Commercial Dual Purpose, Ape Drape Escape, 13th of November 2000 and something. A long, long time ago.
Give us a gig memory.
Oh,
Terry.
In the early days when it was just me and they, and when I used to like a tipple of the old Strongbow and getting absolutely bladdered before playing when I didn't really have much to do other than stand about and tune your guitar now and then. And then I remember once at the Grapes having had about five or six pints, which was a lot for me, and then he went, let's have a Southern Comfort. And I was that bladdered that I had to have a lie down on the floor in the middle of the gig, which was... It was kind of cool.
I remember we were fucking awful. That was the night that I decided to stop getting twatted before the gigs because I couldn't remember any of the words. And
it all added to it, though, didn't it? The mystique. Just how easily it all comes back to us. So we've only played like a gig a year, really, for the past...
Yeah.
Probably... getting on for 10 years, really. But just like those two practices that we generally have, first one you
first
go in and think, and then next one it's like we start sounding a bit professional, and it's not right. I think it's since Steve learned to play the bass, and the old days where I was sort of like plonking away like, and then Steve actually learned the craft of his instrument, and
he got pretty good.
Yeah,
some good musicianship.
And then we realised that Phil could play the guitar really well instead of theremin and ukulele. And then
I remember shitting myself like at one point in the gig when it's one of the first times that I've seen you being a full band, and I think you started playing Pain, and I was just like, whoa, hold on a minute, this band's changed, because obviously it starts with some tapping and then it proper gets into it, and I'm like, whoa, I'm actually really impressed with this, because it changed from what it was to actually like proper good music, and it worked. It was
from ultraviolet acoustic to ultraviolet electric.
I'll take all the credit. I wrote it all, and this lot, you know, fuck them.
I think I'll take those. That's why it worked though, because you actually had some came to practice and said, I've got this, and then we'd sort of try and say to Sam, he wants a beat a bit like this. He's like, I'm not going to fuck you. I'm not playing any drum beats you tell me. I'll do what I want. But the fact that you weren't precious about it and we could say, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we do this? Or it'd sound good if we break down and have like a 5 minute prog wig.
Sorry, techno break.
That was one thing with watching some of the old footage back. The Batman, the one where he had the meltdown about Christian Bale Batman.
Have you got that on footage?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think it got that, but what's it called, that song?
Badass.
Badass, yeah.
Oh, Badass, isn't it? Because it's a good song.
Where we just go into like that prog breakdown and it all came back into one thing and started again and it was like, fucking hell, that sounded really good.
Yeah, I remember that actually, yeah.
Sounded shit at practice.
There was quite a bit in the film that I snuck in with Phil playing his theremin because
Phil's wigging out.
He's just going fucking ape shit and throwing punches at this thing, but it fucking works. And it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't have kept it on that long, but it's like, whoa, 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 and it just totally works. It's fucking brilliant.
I think to begin with, we were all, bar the guitar, we were all sort of quite new to the instruments we were playing. Yeah. And just as we've gone on, I mean, I've stopped playing anything, so it was easier for me. But as we've gone on, everyone sort of, like in other guises, I know Phil and Steve both do bits on their own and stuff, but the musicianship just got that bit better.
Yeah, I reckon so. I mean, I think it was not, like, for me, it was nice sort of keeping it relatively simple, because then, you know, you don't have to be too precious about it. If it's just like four chord wonders, you can sort of play around it a bit. And
I think you can add so much more to it, you know. It's not like a cigarros gig where you've got to sit cross-legged on the floor. Just knock out some punk rock on an acoustic guitar and add some silly sounds and some old men harmonising, which we never tried to sort of harmonise, but managed to sing together and it sound quite good as well. And
they just broke my dream, actually, because we did a cover of a song by Phil Harris, who was actually Baloo the Bear, and I dreamt that I met him. I dreamt that he showed up and I was like,
Hello, Jim. Here's a prickly pear.
You know, Phil Harris is talking in his Baloo voice. And I was saying, are we covering one of your songs? Because,
fuck you, pay me royalties.
The song that I enjoyed performing the most was, what's it called? Rock and Roll Dickhead.
Yeah.
And that actually, the moment that got really fucking cool and I really got into it was in the film, so that was great. Because I'd only seen some shitty, you know, I think Chris Dalton shot it on his phone from like 10 miles away. And it was nice for him to do that, but like, you know, be kind and tell who, you know, I might as well be fucking Kenny Everett on stage. But there was a nice bit of footage of that.
I love that song as well. Because I've always thought I'd like to be in AC/DC.
Yeah,
and that's the closest that I'll ever get to it. And just stomping along to that song's fucking cool.
I remember being at a gig when you played that, and when you do your whole falsetto, it's got a cock up on his head. Someone next to me just turned around and went, what did he just say? And I was just like, he's got a cock up on his head. It's fucking brilliant. It just came out of nowhere, but it just totally worked.
Double thumbs up.
Yeah.
I kind of half pinched that from D-Rob, you know,
Wrong toy.
There was a there was a slightly unhinged act, a guy from Sheffield called D-Rob, and it was Wrong Toy, and then there's, I think at first he was called Billy's Been Sick, which I thought was a better name, and he had a song called, it was something like Rock and Roll Willie, and he went, get out of here with your rock and roll Willie, get out of here with that dirty thing, and and I had a great line like, the only one who cares is your goddamn mother. Rock and roll Willie. So that was, I thought that was a great, just a stupid lyric that felt pretty inspired by that. And also Noel Gallagher on some TV show being a total cunt to Gerard Butler. You could tell Gerard Butler wanted to rip his pop-up pirate head off.
I'll fucking crush you, cunt!
You imagine how that one would play out in real life, you know.
Like you said, like seeing that footage of Rock and Roll Dickie, because I had to go through lots and lots and lots. The film did get longer because I kept on finding bits of songs that I really, really liked. And it's like, I just needed like 5 seconds, but I've just now put a minute of half of Poo Son in it because it sounded fucking amazing. And I just kept on just finding little bits, and then instead of trying to find filler bits, I was then trying to get other people to do stuff so I could put more music in it. Because I think when I counted through, there was something like 11 or 12 bits of songs that I managed to squeeze into this hour. I know there were only clips, but it was when you stand back and look, you think, Jesus, there is quite a lot of songs here. You might not think it, but when you look at it, you know, all in one go, there is lots and lots of stuff.
Now, it baffles me, like Tram Lines this year, well, and the few years before, playing 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Shakespeare, having people not being able to get in to see us. This last gig in particular for me was just immense. Just having 100 plus people shouting, "Terry is a wanker."
Yeah, it's my fault, Mark. Sorry.
but it's brilliant. I love that, and I love the fact that not that we were a comedy band, people can come along and they can shout stuff out and have a laugh and get into it with us, and we're all rock and roll dickheads. Everyone there's got a bit of a dickhead in them, haven't they?
I
did shit myself at that point at that last gig when it was like, well, you kindly said yes. Do you want to come and be on stage? I played a song, fucked it up, which is my girlfriend didn't even manage to get in the fucking room to watch. I haven't played a gig for 10 years, love. Do you want to come? Yeah, of course I'll come. Didn't even fucking get in room.
No birds on the bus.
Yeah. When I thought, right, I've got to somehow get myself on stage, and you know, I interrupted the whole gig, but I thought at the time, right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to see if people will shout, "Terry's a wanker." And up to that point, I was bricking it because I didn't think anyone would do anything. So I just shout, "Terry is a..." Wished. And everyone shouted and everything was all right. But then I went a bit too far with it, saying it about 15 times.
It was brilliant.
It worked. Just what we needed. Cheered him up.
Definitely had a tear in my eye at the end of that one. I think seeing Silver Fox as well, he was nearly in pieces at that.
That's James's brother, who's like supported us in the past, and he actually sang on Aru recording.
Or he pretended to. he provided good vibes in inverted commas in the recording studio.
I need to set up a Bandcamp page and just put all these up for free, you know, like all the recordings we've got, and so people can actually get hold of an MP3.
Yeah, because I mean, some of from the film, the live footage,
you could try and rip the audio off and just have Montage of Feck off the album with the songs that are on it.
I think people want it as well, don't they?
Buy another pack of fags. Randy's payment from me.
We were all going to put together £1 and give it you on stage, but it never happened.
Then you realise just how many hours and hours it took to do it. Do you know, just to go back, I keep going on about the film, but one, I don't know who it was, but I spoke to a woman just at the end of the film, and I mean, at the end, it's not on the YouTube thing, but I did a little sort of mock film trailer with my kids because they were getting pissed off that I was doing it for ages, and it was, you know, kids are kids, they like poo, so it ended up being about dead poo rather than Deadpool. I just managed to put that at the end of the film anyway, just so, you know, I could tell the kids. So many people watched it, and someone actually came up to me and said, "I'm so glad that you put that at the end of the film, because I was upset of how the film ended, and that made me feel better. And I'm just to say it was just a stupid to say it was a stupid made-up film that had no plot, no script, but to actually make someone kind of feel upset that the band had ended, it kind of just made everything all right. It was kind of like the review that we got from Exposed. So, you know, it said, you know, but by the end of it, you loved it, and that's coming from someone who's never, you know, seen the band before. It wasn't what we planned, but it kind of made it feel like more of a proper film.
I think the thing is, all the people that came to watch it are people that have supported the band over however many years, and we've picked up sort of a ragtag crew of people. I don't like to use the term fans, but friends of the band. And
friends of the friends of Batman
who were gutted that they're not going to have something to do on 2 o'clock on Tramline Saturday.
It was a sweet little slot, that, because I think most bands aspire to be like the headliners, don't they? But I always quite like the fact we weren't, because you've not got the pressure, and especially at that time of day, you don't have any bullshit. Like, these long days, listeners might not be in bands or whatever, but it seems like the later you're on, the bigger the delay and the more the stress. But if you're on first, it's kind of like, have a pint, chill out a bit, do your sound test, sound check, and just fucking...
Yeah, who cares if the sound man's a dick? Because we're just going to do it anyway. Sorry, Ash, you're not a dick.
It must have been horrible following you sometimes, though, because, you know, especially the last few gigs when you packed out the Shakespeare to the poor bands that were on after, thinking, fucking hell, we're going to have so many people coming to watch us, and then everyone fucked off and had a pint and had a natter downstairs.
Steve's friends, what they called the ladies that did the...
Fades?
The Fades.
Is it Fades?
They were on directly after us this year, and I was just... too knackered to even contemplate going in and seeing them, which I feel bad about.
Yeah, they sounded like they were all right, actually. Yeah. I don't know, it was kind of nice building a little following, and it did make me regret my decision to leave, but we'll be back.
It's funny, like when I was in the Ape Drape, that we sort of pushed really hard for it, and yeah, we'd got a following. But
that was James's first... Me and James used to be in another band called the Ape Drape Escape, and I kind of left because I thought I was a shit drummer, and these guys were quite dedicated and seemed like the right thing to do. But sorry.
It was like that. We were pushing for it, and we wanted to do it, and we wanted to have a big fan base and everything. But in being in the Friends of Batman, not trying to court that kind of thing... people just sort of picked up on it anyway, and I loved the fact that there were these people there that knew that we were idiots and liked it when we fucked up playing a song, or if you had to stop in the middle or what have you. And you know, like at some gigs, people would be like, "Oh, I can't believe they messed that up."
Terry throws in a techno breakdown unexpectedly.
Yeah. But they were just in tune with us and understood that. It doesn't matter. We're here to have fun, and that's what it should be about. Really, it's not about making your millions. It's about having a laugh and experience there. Take it away.
Yeah. It's the bad thing about bands. When you're in a band, you kind of get a bit tunnel vision that this is what you want to do with your life, and you put, you know, focus it. I'm going to get famous. I'm going to do this, that, and the other, and then it doesn't. You got to be lucky for to work, doesn't it?
There's an A&R man coming tonight.
Get all excited.
got to be on form. I really liked you. I've no idea what I'm going to do with you. Try. Cunt. It's a shit business.
I think like it seems like only now we're in the dawn of the time. Like, I went to see what they called Lovely Eggs recently, and they're like kind of, they were signed and everything, and they didn't really get much money out of it, so they went down the route of just booking their own gigs and self-publishing, and they actually seem to make a living out of it. And it's kind of, I think it's like we're only just at the point where you could probably get away with that.
Yeah.
But then there's only two of them as well, so the overhead's pretty low. Something like Bob Logg, I mean, I'm pretty sure he exists on just touring.
Yeah, he's fucking amazing, though.
Yeah, that guy's pretty fucking sweet. And that was our highlight, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that gig was ace. Now, I think being in a band, I always thought, yeah, I want to be famous and everything, but really, I would have fucking hated it. I mean, the benefit of being in the Friends of Batman is that it was Terry, not me, so I could put that mask on and be a dickhead. But, you know, like
I'm gonna set a fake Facebook account for Terry, and they gave everybody the login details, and then James had to tell me, "You do know that people might think this is me," so I had to, you know, calm down a little bit. We can't start calling everybody cunts.
I can call everyone a cunt. Yeah, but they think it's me. I'm an antisocial cunt in real life, which Terry's given me the opportunity to sort of
express yourself.
Express myself how I wouldn't have done otherwise. I mean, I'd never have got up on stage and sung before unless it was like backing vocals for the band.
Oh man, then, you're natural.
Then I'm fucking singing "Since You've Been Gone" in its entirety.
Waving to people as they pass by.
Because Terry always did a cover version though in the early days, as I recall.
Yeah,
quite nailed Axel F.
No, they were always a failure. I think the best
the
one.
Stylophone.
Yeah, No Limits.
Certainly selling this band, actually, aren't you, lads?
No Limits was probably the best one that I did. Stylophone is such a fucking horrible instrument to play. I never quite graduated to the big Stylophone 350, which is always a dream.
Bit of a non-C vibe to the Stylophone these days, sadly, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll still push it.
And Rolf's gone down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an instrument from the past, some Rolf Harris bullshit.
Bullshit.
I see a mate from uni. He had some non-C Rolf Harris story, because he's from London, and said he had some dodgy friend from school that reckoned he'd robbed someone's flat, and he realised it was Rolf Harris's flat, and found some dodgy photos of children. And this was like in the late 90s. Apparently they tried to blackmail Rolf, and he was on the phone going, "Oh, I'm going to have you fucking killed, you cunt."
Really?
Not in a shit.
I'm going to tie you down. I'm a kangaroo.
Yeah. So, yeah, there might have been some. I won't tell him in front. It wasn't a friend trying to rob someone. It was some dodgy. We all know someone dodgy, don't we?
Yeah. And, someone who's trying to wank a dog off.
Oh.
Sorry, that's going back to it.
I don't think he tried. I think he did. Funny enough, that appeared on my Facebook feed today.
Someone Alison used to, well, no, someone that was
wondered why a dog bit him in arm.
Someone who were in my sister's year at school allegedly wanked a dog off.
Bloody hell.
Practice.
It's all gone downhill. It's a good job you're editing this.
Right.
Perhaps you could end with just wanking a dog off. Get these two clowns out of my studio. Now fuck off.
Okay, thanks again to James and Renee for joining me, and I'd strongly advise you to go on YouTube and type in "montage of Feck Off" or type "Friends of Batman" into Google, and you'll find some more info about the film and the band and that kind of thing. So that was cool, really enjoyed that. So big shout out to Renee for all his hard work, and also for Terry for all his beautiful singing within the rockumentary and other, and getting his balls out, that kind of thing. That was a definite highlight for me, stroke low light. So we'll be back. I'll be back with McVeigh. We're going to try and get together sooner rather than later. And we're going to do this kind of horror special. He's just been to Solo Screams Horror Fest, so he's got loads to talk about. I did a kind of mini horror marathon over the Halloween period. So again, sorry we let Halloween sail by, but we're going to make up for it. And I'm actually thinking, might be a good time to share a personal ghostly experience I once had to add to the ambience. So thanks for listening. We're going to end with a track by Friends of Batman,
It's a song Terry sings on. It's Terry's kind of big balls to the wall, fuck you to the crowd kind of tune, and it's called Pain.
This is great.
Since you left the Friends of Batman?
Well, I've been travelling the world, I've been smuggling drugs, I've been taking people out, you know, with a couple of guns, and I've been fucking.